I want to introduce you to someone who has a story. on the Diamond Factory Hotline, hello to Cole Brower.
Hi, how you doing?
Whoa, this is better reception than I get calling next door. Cole, I have never started an interview like this in my life. But before I tell people your story, I want to ask, where in the world are you right now?
I'm actually about 400 miles off of Brazil, actually, in the South Atlantic. I'm using Starlink. It's amazing, actually, that I can talk to you so clearly and hear you guys so clearly. Technology's changed everything.
You're 400 miles. That's, you're in the Atlantic, right? I'm just trying to nail this. You're 400 miles off Brazil in the Atlantic Ocean. What journey are you on right now? Where are you sailing in the world?
So I started the journey in Spain. So I had a boat called First Light that I raced around the world solo. And then I sold the boat to another woman, actually, who lives in Australia. And her and I are sailing it from Spain to Australia right now together.
Wait a minute. So I'm trying to figure this. You're going from Spain down towards South America. Then you're swinging around the Cape of Good Hope. Is that true?
Yep. Around South Africa. Yep.
Then into the Indian Ocean.
Yep.
and then it's just a skip, hop, and a jump from the Cape of Good Hope over to Australia. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
How long is this journey going to take you?
Well, it's supposed to be 2 months. It's supposed to be 2 months, you know. So we started December 1st. And now, what's today? Boxing Day, 26th. So, yeah, we had to make a pit stop in Cape Verde because we hit something really hard and had to check out and make sure that the boat was okay. And then we're hoping to be, like, the first week of February in Australia, actually, to catch the end of the summer, Southern Hemisphere summer.
Now, let me tell people about Cole Brower. She's 29 years old. Earlier this year, she became the first United States woman to sail solo around the world. It was part of the Global Solo Challenge. 16 sailors had entered the event. She was the only woman. She was the youngest person. And she finished second out of the 16 sailors on a 40-foot boat. Let me tell you something, Cole. I would have liked a few hundred feet further than 40.
Yeah, I'm sure a bunch of the tanker ship guys out here would like a little bit more, too. They got to deal with a little 40-foot racing boat going around the planet next to them.
There are so many questions I have, but my partner, Joe Trahan, has a whole bunch of questions he has. So we'll start alternate firing questions to around-the-world sailor Cole Brower.
Cole, first of all, I got a chance to come across your story quite a while ago, and it just is one of the most impressive things that I have ever come in contact with.
With the way
our society has changed, with the proliferation of the cell phone, just being able to be by yourself for that long is incredible in and of itself. And so I'm curious, in terms of when you went on that journey around the world, how did you continue connection with your family, with your friends, with all your loved ones? How did you make it happen? And was it enough? Were you wanting? How'd you deal with it?
I think the first 2 weeks, like anyone that gets, you know, deployment or it works offshore, like offshore tankers, the first 2 weeks are the hardest. Mm. You miss your friends, your family, and it's serious. Like, I think I cried every single day. I didn't tell anybody that. Like, that was a pretty, you know,
social media is one of those things. You only get to see one side. You don't get to see all of it.
Yeah.
So I FaceTime my mom every morning, and she's, my mom's real tough. She was like, well, suck it up. You know, you signed up for this. You put yourself out there. Now you get yourself out of the situation. So, but we talked every day, and she was a big encouragement. And I think that, without my, like, the support of my friends and my family, like, it would have been so much harder. And a lot of the other competitors, I don't know if they had the type of support system that I had. So I got really lucky to have the people that I did, and my team was amazing, and they were, you know, lived, breathed, ate by me and the team. So I couldn't thank them more, honestly. So it's all chalked up to the people that you surround yourself with.
And just a quick follow-up to that. Was there something you learned about yourself when you had to go through that particular tough time in your journey?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of times, like, we as humans, we spend so much time looking forward to the next thing and the next thing. Okay, what's next? You know, you got to go through high school, college, get married, have kids, you know, and you're on this train. And then you're shoved out in the middle of the ocean, and there's none of that. Like, the only thing that you're allowed to focus on is staying alive. Mm-hmm. And there's something that, like, you almost have to purge your body of society to get into that mindset and then become very, very present in your everyday life out here offshore. And once you become very present, you become at peace. But before you purge society from yourself, it can be quite traumatic. For your mental state, for sure.
Cole, I've got some quick questions about the journey.
Yeah.
What did you eat? You couldn't possibly take enough for 130 days, could you?
Yeah, so there's actually a company in Texas. It's called Packet Gourmet, and they're amazing. It's a family-run company, and all their produce, poultry, beef is, like, from their farm in Texas. And they're amazing to work with. I mean, they sent me a bunch of stuff to try, different things. It's all healthy. It's got the amount of calories that I need in each meal, just the right amount of nutrients and vitamins and minerals. And so I had all the food that I possibly could need for 130 days. And it comes in these freeze-dried packets, almost like astronaut food. And you just add boiling water to it, shake it up, wait 10 minutes, and you've got, you know, full-blown meal, you know, tortilla soup. That, you know, is actually better than what you can get sometimes at most restaurants.
Oh, my Lord. The most dangerous moment on this 30,000-mile, 130-day solo sailing journey. Most dangerous.
Let me think about that. Honestly, the most dangerous situations that ever happened to me were coming in contact with, like, other ships. So, it actually becomes significantly safer once you get into the Southern Ocean, because in the North Atlantic and even the South Atlantic, there's so many boats everywhere, and there's tanker ships and fishermen and, you know, floating objects and debris. And that's actually becomes the scariest, because you'll be sleeping and all of a sudden you get a huge alarm and you've got a ship that's a mile from you on a collision course. So those are my, like, daily fears. But I think the biggest one that maybe happened was I was thrown across the boat and I cracked my rib when a wave hit the side of the boat. And thank God I was inside. And that wasn't, I don't know if that was terribly scary. I think it was more surprising, because one second I was sitting and the next second I was in the air. Wow. And that took about a month to heal, because ribs don't really heal that fast. And so that was more of an annoyance than anything.
I'm sorry, but I can't brush off broken ribs as an annoyance. We've got to find another word there.
Indeed. And Cole, I want to thank you, because I would have no other reason to even bring this up in my line of work as a sportscaster. But I will. When I was in college, I went to Loyola University in New Orleans. A buddy of mine had a 25-foot out-island sailboat. We would sail from New Orleans to Pensacola. And, Cole, believe you me, when 420-ish old dudes show up in Pensacola with the sailboat it was a blast. And we did it three or four different times. So that leads me to this question, because there was one time we had a dinghy mishap, and there was all kinds of sleeping bags and tents kind of strewn about 10, 12 yards offshore. So this has nothing to do with that, but I do have a question for you, because I suspect that you have come across some rogue waves. And I'm curious about the technology of, you know, what alerts you to that? How do you maneuver it? What do you do? Because I know they're out there when you're, like you are now, 400 miles off the coast. How on earth do you prepare for it and deal with it?
Well, we have so much technology on the boat now. I mean, waves are actually the most, like, the biggest thing that we kind of have to worry about when we get into the Southern Ocean. You know, you can have 80-mile-an-hour winds in the Southern Ocean, but you're less worried about that than the 30-foot waves.
Yep.
Because at that point, you become a toy boat, you know, in a children's bathtub, and it's not very fun. And the one thing that you have to think about is you have to make sure that you keep, like, your ass. Sorry, I know we're on the radio.
No, you're good.
That's right.
You gotta keep your butt to the wave, you know? So if all of a sudden, if you show your belly to the wave, it's gonna roll you, you know? I mean, it won't roll you all the way over, but it will roll you to like 90 degrees, and that's how I ended up cracking my rib. Oh. And that was just me being dumb and not recognizing that, like, hey, I'm in a situation, I need to get out of it, I need to jibe, and I need to make sure that I keep my butt to this wave state. Even if it means going in the absolute wrong direction, it doesn't matter. You have to stay safe. And I was just naive in that moment. And you just can't be naive to the ocean. I mean, she'll take advantage of you.
What keeps you entertained for 130 days and nights? I mean,
well, you know what's amazing?
Okay.
I mean, before Starlink. I mean, you download movies for your iPad, and then that's all you get. You get those movies, and you rewatch the same movies until you get from point A to point B, you know, like an airplane. But but now with Starlink, I can stream. I'm like, it's Gucci. I can stream Netflix. I finished Netflix last year. Like, I think I watched everything you could possibly watch.
So on your way around Antarctica on Christmas Day, were you watching It's a Wonderful Life?
Oh, my God. It's my favorite Christmas movie. It's the tradition. I was drinking wine and watching my movie. I took the sails down enough because it was blowing like 55 or something with pretty big waves. And I just took the sails down a little bit, you know, put my Christmas lights up and watched It's a Wonderful Life and drank some wine. And you know, I'm not out here getting, you know, toasted or anything, but it does feel good to bring a little bit of, like, humanity to this world, you know?
Hey, Cole, the people who are out there getting toasted, we don't ever get to talk to again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true.
I once talked to a person who walked from Russia across the North Pole to Canada. It took him 3 months. And I asked him what the scariest part was. And he said the scariest part was at night when you had to find a place to sleep on ice and you started to hear cracks.
Oof.
What was the scariest part for you at night?
Ooh. That's hard because I'm definitely I'm a creature at night, so I like the night. So nights aren't so bad. I'll light the whole boat up, and so I've got lights inside, outside, and so I can see pretty much everything. And I just make sure that I'm always like tethered in at night. So I have like a tether that attaches to a harness and then attaches to the boat. And so I can walk around the whole boat. I think at night, it really is just making sure that where you put your feet, that's what's got to go there, no matter what. You know, you can't be running around, you know, like second guessing where your footing is. Like where you got to put your foot's got to go there. And like because the boat's moving, and sometimes you can't really see what the waves are going to do, but you got to make sure that you're staying awake and focused. Like, okay, this is what the wave state is. This is what it feels like. And this is how my body moves. And that's usually like the sketchiest part is just you know, you have to be very, very aware. Like the same way that the like ancient Polynesians had sailed before, well before GPS, they just followed the stars. And they would lay in the hull of their boats, and they knew where the land was because of the way that the waves were hitting the hull of the boat. So it's the same way. I'm just bringing these ancient techniques into modern-day society with a little bit of Netflix involved.
Could I ask a final question? It's about the journey you're on now.
Yeah.
You mentioned your boat hit something hard. Do you know what that was?
Yeah, well, so at first we didn't really know what it was. Like it stopped the boat, and anything that stops the boat, you know, when we're doing about 14 knots is terrifying. And so I heard metal kind of going across the keel, and it terrified me. Anything that has to do with metal is it causes damage. But we ran all the checks, and then we dove in, checked the keel and everything. And I mean, this boat, First Light, she's a 2008 boat. She's been around the block, so she's pretty strong. So we're not really quite sure, but we think it might be between the Canary Islands and Cape Verde. There's these fishing, big fishing pots that are metal, and sometimes they can like be cut loose, and normally off of like Senegal, off of Africa, they use these big, huge fishing. And what we think is that maybe we hit it, we stopped because we hit this giant thing, and then it kind of just rolled around the keel and just scared the ever living, you know, Jesus out of us.
Well, first of all, I want to say this, Cole. You have the most sophisticated disposition. You seem just so wise beyond your years. But I do want to ask you about something specifically, and it's about solitude. Because your perspective on solitude is probably a lot different than most of us who roam the planet. How can solitude be your friend?
Yeah, I think it goes back to my original comment about being very present. And so if you're always looking, you know, like if you're forgetting where your feet are, forgetting what you're doing and not paying attention to like just the moment, you know, you start being like, oh, well, the grass is always greener. I'm always looking at the next thing. Oh, I got to be here, you know, and that's the thing is that when you start to be very, very kind with yourself and know that, you know, you're only going to go as fast as you can. You know, you can't go any faster than what the boat will allow you to go. And if you become kind to yourself and kind to the boat, you know, you start to accept it and almost like submit to it. And so solitude doesn't really become a problem anymore if you can just be really, really kind to your own mind. But if you can't let your mind relax in that, solitude can eat you alive. And I mean, I've watched friends, you know, that have depression and problems, you know, and a lot of mental issues in the United States right now. And it's because people, you know, we're always pushing people past what they can actually handle. And we just need to be like, no, you're good. You're happy. You're healthy. You're in a good spot. You know, you don't have to go to college if you don't want to right now. You know, take your time, figure it out. And I think that we just push people too hard to always be looking forward to something versus just really submitting to the present day.
Being kind to your vessel. Norm, there's a little bit of life advice right there.
There it is. Cole, God bless you. Travel safely. And tell you in a nearly 50-year career of doing sports talk, you are the first person I've talked to 400 miles off the coast of Brazil.
I would imagine that would be thrill, but hopefully not the last.
Hey, be well.
Thanks, Cole.
All right.
Bye, Cole.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Wow.
What a story.
Remarkable.
Thanks, by the way, to my friend Mike Matern, who doggedly pursued figuring out how to get linked up with Cole on the air. What time is it right now off the coast of Brazil?
That's a great question.
Probably not far off from ours, right?
Let's see, four hours difference?
Anyway, who cares? But thanks to Mike Matern for
amazing
spending weeks trying to get this for us.
Amazing.